Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that promo shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
The presenting sponsor for today's episode of Hear That Podcast Growling is Visa, a network working for everyone. All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Growlin, Paul Dater Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic are with you, along with the Bengal Boys' new intro for us. Now, I feel like I should have been singing along with it right off the top. It should have been HTPG, right? I feel like that's what comes next. That's what would have come next on that YMCA intro. I was waiting for it. I was even going to think if I could figure out how to do the hand signals. But thanks to the Bengal Boys for some new stuff for this season.
The G would be really hard. Yeah. I think we'd need a couple yoga classes to work that one out.
Yeah, I don't know if I stretch like that anymore, but I could try. I could try. But thanks to them for some new intro, and I think we're going to keep some of those rolling, some new ones. You never know what you're going to get when you show up here, but look out for them. I think they're doing new videos and everything for before every game. If you don't, you should follow them, Bengal Boys. We got some news to get to. Ricardo Allen, Sean Davis, Trenton Irwin, Eli Apple, all in the news. Joe Mixon, Evan McPherson with some awards. We're going to talk about injury reports. We're going to update you on Joe Burrow's knee. Everyone's staring at Joe Burrow's knee. What's going on with Joe Burrow's knee? And we're going to do a little bit of an offensive line assessment, also in a story that's going to be up soon on the website, which, by the way, Jay, you've got a story up now. Just kind of digging into the three safety sets and some of the stuff happening in the secondary, that what will happen next without Ricardo Allen. The 50% off new subscription promotional deal running out soon, so make sure you get to that. Go click on the link and subscribe if you've been thinking about it. This is the best deal. It's going to run out really soon. Please go get in now on any of our stories. You can click the links and sub. We got Kevin Fishbane from Chicago, our beat writer for the Bears, who's awesome and going to talk about the Andy Dalton, Justin Fields phenomenon and the beard and so many things that's happening. Their offensive line, so many similarities when you start talking about these two teams. It's like, just, you know, Andy Dalton can win some games, and this offensive line, it's really not that bad. It's, oh, I mean, it might be average, maybe. Like, it's just like it takes me to that like place of home covering a team. Talking with Kevin Fishbane, we're gonna have some run passer boots, a new growler bet for you, make some predictions as we preview Sunday's game at Chicago, and I talk about things like pizza and brats and delicious beer and lake views, things like that.
Yeah, I kind of dropped the ball there and didn't ask Kevin for any restaurant recommendations. Although I feel like you're going to have more shots to do that than me. It feels like you got to either go Lou Malnati's or I can't even say the other one. And I'm not going to go there because I had a bad experience with that restaurant in Indianapolis. And I know you're not supposed to hold grudges, but I hold grudges. So
hold a grudge.
I'm voting for Lou Malnati's on Saturday night.
Hey, that's why I have not gone to Potbelly in like a decade because of one bad ordering experience. And that's just the way things go. Let's talk a little bit about some of the news we've got. Ricardo Allen has a broken hand and a hamstring issue, and he goes on IR. Jay, as you wrote about, you know, they ran a lot of three safety sets, used him a lot more than we anticipated. He wasn't just some backup safety. He had a real role, and where they would put him and Jesse Bates in the back and drop Von Bell up to be a little bit more physical in the run game and kind of have that hybrid player. So we'll see where they go from there. You can read more about where we think they will go from there in Jay's piece. Sean Davis, who played for you might remember him from his time with the Steelers. He's kind of bounced around. He was released out the practice squad of the Colts this past week. He is added to the practice squad. Trenton Irwin is up onto the 53 as the sixth receiver. And you've got We'll see what happens on game day. They could call up Sean Davis. They could call up Trayvon Henderson. Or they could just not even bring up a fourth safety. We'll see what they do. But I would say right now I'd probably lean towards them calling up Trayvon Henderson. But time will tell what happens there. But they're hoping that Allen will be back after the minimum 3 weeks on IR with the hamstring. They didn't think would have kept him out three. But we'll see how long it is till we see him back. But it's not like some season ending thing. Joe Mixon won your FedEx Ground Player of the Week. I know that's exciting. People really love tracking the FedEx Ground Player of the Week awards. Leads the NFL or leads the AFC in rushing. Evan McPherson was the AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. Please let me have 1 6-week run of professional success in my life like Evan McPherson has had. Game Ball Special Teams Player of the Week, dominating camp, just hitting bombs from everywhere. Just shows up and he's getting carried off the field and an NFL game is over. First walk off. I mean, this dude is just, he's a saint right now. He's the hero. He's going to be like up next to the genus of water on Fountain Square before you know it, in like a kicking bronze statue. I mean, it's just like, what a run for Evan.
He's probably filming a Skyline commercial as we speak.
He looks like a nice little Skyline guy. He looks like the people that work at Skyline. Like, that's just it. He looks like he should be serving the conies, not in the commercial. I mean, he's just this young pup who's just here, just hitting bombs and, you know, cool as the other side of the pillow. When he looks like he should be serving conies to Yitz Skyline, God bless his heart. So we got that injury report news. You got Darius Phillips, showed up as they went with a double walkthrough on Wednesday. And he's still kind of feeling the after effects of Sunday's game where you played five quarters and the defense was up in 83 snaps and some guys were dinged. I mean, Burrow's got his knee thing. So I think they went a little easier with plans on just kind of having one real day of practice on Thursday to get themselves ready for the game against Chicago. And you know, Jay, once you've won one game, why practice anymore? Like, why even practice at all? You got it. I mean, you're good. Just keep it rolling, right?
Yeah, we always heard about Victory Monday. Now you get Victory Wednesday. You basically get a half day on Wednesday. But it does make sense. It wasn't just the length of the game. It was the heat. And it's a longer season now. You know, 17 games instead of 16. It's just getting going. These guys hardly played in the preseason at all. And then you go out and put in that kind of workload on a Sunday. It kind of makes sense. It never would have happened even 5 years ago. But it's just a new world in the NFL. And you know, Zach embraces all of the kind of the new thinking of head coaches these days. And I was a little surprised by it, but not, it wasn't a head shaker. It made sense on a number of areas.
Long season. And you had 18 weeks now and all that stuff. If you can sneak in something like that, I guess you do it. I mean, I remember his opening press conference. We're going to believe in having the freshest team on Sundays. And that's going to be, I think that's the new wave of thought, is that freshness and it's not like when you're doing two walkthroughs, you're still going through the mental work of understanding what you need to do, but it's focused on freshness when it actually comes time to play on Sundays. And that's very much the new school line of thought. And part of what the NFLPA's argument was with less preseason, with less work in training camp, all that stuff is because they point to, look, it's proven that the level of play has not gone down because you're missing these things. And it's more about players staying fresh and staying healthy. So be it. But so you've got that. Let's Joe Burrow on the injury report with his knee. Enlisted as a knee, and it was originally thought up as an ankle, but it appeared, you know, when you really look at it, and it kind of got landed on his knee, and that was looks like is more of where he was feeling the soreness. But he says, look, yeah, I was sore after the game, or the next day I felt a little sore in the knee, but today I feel great and I feel as good as I have any time in camp. So and he was listed as would have been a full participant in practice with that knee. So all things seem to be fine. We'll see what he's listed on Thursday and if he's listed at all for Sunday's game, but he says no limitations in practice, should be all good to go. No worries there, but you know, sore knee after the first game, and some of that's to be expected, but some of that's also because an almost 300-pound man laid on it.
Yeah, I mean, if that's going to come up, that's what you want, is him landing on the knee. You don't want him getting hit on the knee. You don't want it torquing on a cut or a plant, something like that. And he did kind of get, after he got taken down, kind of twisted. And I think that's where the ankle roll came. But I was watching him at practice yesterday closely. Well, at the walkthrough, it wasn't a practice. And it was basically special teams for the 30 minutes we were out there. But when that period ended and the offense came over to the main field, Burrow ran over there and no hint of a limp or anything. And, you know, another part of, I think, why, I don't know if this affected Zach's plan or not, but it made sense too. Yesterday was a really rainy day and you're out on the grass, and that's the last thing you want, is these guys going full speed and, you know, getting another soft tissue injury somewhere. They've had their share of hamstrings and that type of thing. So I at the moment don't have any worries about Joe Burrow. He looked to be moving fine. We watched him walk up to the podium yesterday, no hint of a limp or anything. And then again, like I said, running from one field to the other, looked like there was no issue.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, you don't know for sure until you get out there, but all things appear to be fine there. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're a guy who's coming off that, your last thing you want is to feel sore the next day. I'm sure that there's been some nervous moments, but the fact that he at least says that he's feeling absolutely fine now and is a full participant is a good thing, but you know, something to keep an eye on, I guess. Marcus Bailey also would have been limited yesterday with a knee injury. Don't forget about him as a special teams guy that they would need. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Talking about Burrow and the hits, I mean, we see the sacks, and he takes seven hits in the game, seven real hits. I kind of had the desire, I spent most of this week really trying to dive into a real offensive line assessment of what that debut looked like, what the concerns are with it going forward. And there's a number of different elements there. And kind of one of the interesting things that came out of it was, yes, five sacks is bad. Five sacks with only 27 attempts is worse. They had the worst sack percentage in the league by a long shot. And that part is not good. You know, you get free runners, guys just, you know, instantly winning and coming in without any help or any sense of somebody there to be a second wave. Those are issues, but the deeper dive on it to maybe get to the truer stats. And I know this is not me making, maybe it is me making excuses for the offensive line. I wanted to make sure we start with, like, the sacks are bad. The amount of hits is bad. None of that's great, but we're talking about, we're not forgetting no donkeys just because we're the off season's over. We're trying to find this level of no donkeys. I think if you look at really the total hits taken by a quarterback, it ranks right in the middle with the rest of the league. Seven is about the average number that you saw across the league for every quarterback this week. Pressure percentage, you know, right in the middle there. This was not some high amount. I mean, the actual pressure percentage put on Burrow was in the top half of the league as far as protection goes. And so you're right in the middle. That's where they need to be. If their pressure percentage lives at 15 to 7, whatever the, you know, where they're at, right in that middle spot all year, you feel okay with that. You need less of the actual sacks, but I think it made it look worse than it actually was.
Yeah, and some of it was communication, and you had that, you had a good question of Zach about how much of that is just week one feeling it out. And people forget, you know, it took Joe Burrow a while to get up to speed, and he only had the three preseason snaps. Trey Hopkins only had three preseason snaps, and he had far fewer camp reps than Joe Burrow. They gave him a lot of time off, and they used Billy Price as the first string center a lot of the time. And it does feel like a week one hiccup more so than a blaring siren that this is going to be an issue all year, but we'll see. I mean, you've got another huge challenge this week in Akeem Hicks coming right up the middle. You're probably going to see elite interior guys for a while. Pittsburgh, that whole D line is going to be a challenge. So they need to get it figured out this week, and do it. I don't know. I don't want to say quickly, cause I just said this week, but it is something, there's some urgency there. They've got to get it figured out, and you kind of feel like they will. You look at what Trey Hopkins has been through his career, and you kind of give him that week one pass after a stunted offseason coming off the ACL.
Well, you know, the Bears are going to be targeting him this week.
Yep.
I mean, sure. Akeem Hicks is the real game wrecker here. I mean, from my seat, you know, we can talk all we want to about Khalil Mack, and that's very fair, and he can be very dangerous. Hicks is the one that can ruin your day this week, because that's their strength on your weakness. That's the matchup problem. They need to be better. You know, Joe Mixon needs to be better with his eyes of seeing guys coming through. They need to be better at scheming up the middle to give help, and whether that's guards getting over or whatever, and not leaving Trey Hopkins on an island. And that's what happened. I mean, he was left on an island twice, and Michael Pierce got him twice, and they weren't able to really help out enough. They've got to be better with that. You know, you can't have schemes that you get caught leaving Drew Sample on Danielle Hunter one-on-one, and he can't even get enough of him for the second part of your help, Samaje Perine, to get over, you know, which is what happened on that sack, the one that actually landed on Burrow. And, you know, because here's the thing. The good side is this. Your tackles were outstanding. Jonah Williams and Riley Reiff gave up zero pressures in 31 pass block attempts. Zero. Riley Reiff was 100% win rate. Not even a single W against him. Not, you know, where a guy gets past him even though he doesn't get a pressure. Just perfect. And that's ideal. The run game was great. It started slow. I think some of that was Mixon early, kind of trying to get his tracks in the wide zone and all that stuff for the first time. It wore down the Vikings. It went from 3, 2, 3, 4 yards to 5, 7, 10 yards, you know, by the time you got into that fourth quarter. And Mixon is giving you 4.4 a clip. If Mixon is giving you games at 4.4 a clip, whether you run it 29 times or 15, you are winning a lot. Because that coupled with this pass game can be really dangerous. And that was the wide zone and some of that stuff looking really good. Frank Pollock showing up, right? I mean, that's great. What you saw with them ability to have run and the tackles look good. You worry about the scheme and you're worried about that interior line as we thought. Suofilo had one where he, you know, the touchdown to T. Higgins where Burrow takes a big shot because Suofilo got beat. You know, how many times is that going to happen? You know, you're going to take hits and you're even going to take some sacks. You need those big hit numbers to be a little less. But it probably wasn't as bad as it actually looked when you talk about, you know, everybody crushing them for all the sacks and they're going to get Burrow killed and this, that, and the other.
No, and it probably would have looked worse had it been what we saw last year, where he's dropping back 35, 40, 50, 60 times in a game.
Yeah.
It could have got really ugly. So that Mixon was the key piece there in getting that running game going. And, you know, you just kind of cross your fingers that the interior of the line can get it figured out and get the pass rush slowed down before something does happen, before he takes a big hit that causes him to miss a snap or two or maybe more.
Yeah, I mean, every game can't look like that.
No.
There is no doubt, but you hope that the fact that it was, man, tackles were great. We think we know who Trey Hopkins is. You're hoping that that's not going to be who he is. And then you feel like you have the no donkey set up, and if they play at that level, you should be able to move the ball. And they did still score 27 points on the Vikings. So see where we go from there. Jay, you've got some stats for me, I think.
I do. Imagine this. We're talking about 2-0 stats. The chance to go 2-0.
2-0 stats. So they're happy for now. And I know you're going to have, I assume you're going to have sad too, right?
They are happy in the sense that, you know, 2-0, that's as good as you can get. I looked at a couple of things. First of all, I went back to 1990 when they went to the 12-team playoff set up. And yes, it's 14 now, but that's not a big enough sample size. So since 1990, teams that start 2-0 make the playoffs 62.7% of the time. That's a lot on the line this week against Chicago, you would think. But this franchise has started 2-0 14 times, and they've made the playoffs 7. So they're down in the 50% range when they start 2-0. And in the Mike Brown era, started in 1992 with that famous 2-0 start from Dave Shula. Since 1992, they've started 2-0 8 times and only made the playoffs 3 of those seasons when they started 2-0. That's 37.5%. So around the league, 2-0 almost is almost a 2 out of 3 chance of making the playoffs. Here in Cincinnati, it's closer to 1 out of 3, but you'll take it. I mean, if you can go 2-0, we've talked about this so much, it with the early part of this season setting up for success, and you can see the confidence really having a chance to start to catch, and this team starting to build something. And they are underdogs at Chicago, but they were underdogs last week. They've won 3 of the last 4 games when they've been underdogs of 3 points or more. This will be a chance to make it 4-1.
Evan McPherson was on the Pat McAfee show this week. And he had one, which is always entertaining, and I enjoy him ripping the Bengals for not having an indoor practice facility at every single possible turn. Deserved on that. But the interesting thing that he said was, you know, the best way I can tell you about things here is that Clark Harris and Kevin Huber, who have been here, I believe, actually, since Mike Brown took over. I mean, they've been here forever. Say it's different here right this year than it has ever been. As far as the vibe, the happiness, people love coming to work, they like each other, they're hanging. I mean, even more so than under Marvin. I mean, they go all the way back to Kevin in 2008, 2009. And you know, that speaks volume. I mean, these guys they know this world. It's like us. They've been here longer than us, Jay. They know the inside of that locker room. They know what it feels like. They know what it's like to be a Bengal. And to say that, I've heard that, you know, in passing conversations with people organizationally, I tend to take that with a grain of salt this time of year. I feel like you hear that sometimes a lot. But you have heard it way more. And before the win, I mean, this went back to just during camp, just how different the vibe felt. And maybe you could really feel that, you know, the real culture stuff that you've been talking about people that love coming to work, that love competing, that like legitimately like each other. You know, we heard Joe Mixon talk a lot about that and other guys. And maybe that's real. I mean, and I think that when you couple that with 2-0, I think that can be a whole mood, if you will, as the kids would say.
Well, it better be, because are you ready for sad stats?
Yeah, let's go. Let's get sad. That's enough happy. That was way too optimistic.
The under Zach in September on the road, Bengals are 0-4-1. On the road overall, they are 1-19-1 in their last 21 road games. Not good at all. This would actually be, if they can beat Chicago, because the last road game they played was in Houston, and they won that game last year. This would be only their second two-game road winning streak since AJ McCarron was the quarterback in 2015. They won at Cleveland with Andy. They won at San Francisco with AJ McCarron. The only other time they won two in a row on the road in that stretch is kind of like this year where it's split seasons. It was the finale against the Ravens in 17 and the opener at Indy in 18. Their road game history is not great at all. And it's not just in the Zach era. It goes all the way back to the end of that five straight playoff run that they had. That'll be something to keep an eye on because it's not just going on the road. It's going on the road with actual fans. Last year, never had to go silent count, never had to deal with that energy of momentum that the home team gets from the crowd. That's all going to be in play Sunday in Chicago.
You know what bad teams do, Jay?
Lose
on the road.
Yes.
They lose on the road a lot. It's when you've got a bad team who's been bad for a long time, they're very bad on the road usually. And that tells and that's that. But I do think it's a big part of any team turning things around is the ability to go into somebody else's house on a home opener and win a tilt. You know, it's hashtag win a tilt season almost, isn't it? I mean, it's like there's no excuses. You've got a team, the Bears, who have their issues, and you need to go in there and win, and it can really set you up. It can really, really set you up for everything that you want this year to be. All right, and can they do it? Well, there's no better place to discuss that than going to Chicago and bringing in our guy Kevin Fishbane, who's amongst a host of people that are based there and cover the Bears. So let's talk a little bit about what Sunday is going to look like, and specifically from inside Chicago's room.
Kevin, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Jay. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Glad to have you. Chicago's one of our favorite trips every year, so we are really looking forward to this. And I'm not going to throw you a curveball right off the bat. I think the obvious question that anybody in Cincinnati wants to know is how is Dalton looking? How short is his leash? And how much might we see Justin Fields on Sunday?
You know, I guess I don't know exactly the ebbs and flows of Cincinnati's, you know, relationship with Andy Dalton when he was there. Obviously, there was some love, there was some hate, what have you, like it was with a lot of those teams. I don't know if there's a single Andy Dalton fan in Chicago outside of Hallis Hall. And that's nothing like necessarily against Andy Dalton. I think everybody agrees he's better than Nick Foles. He's better than Mitch Trubisky, low bar. But nobody wants him to be quarterback. Everybody wants Justin Fields. And it's going to be really interesting on Sunday because the second that Fields is going to come on the field at some point. We saw that last week. He had five snaps. I would expect more this week. The second that Fields takes the field, the place is going to absolutely erupt. And when Dalton comes back on the field, they're going to boo him. He could be 10 for 10 with two touchdowns at that point. And that's just what's going to happen. So, you know, it's interesting. You look back at that week one game. It was obviously ugly, but you don't put a ton on Andy Dalton. They threw a bad interception in the red zone, but otherwise they moved the ball pretty well. They were decent on third down. They just couldn't convert in Rams territory. You know, the 0 for 3 on fourth down, and the defense was abysmal. So what's interesting is you look at Andy Dalton in a vacuum, like he's fine. He's just like a lot of quarterbacks this town has had. He's perfectly fine. You can win with him. But unfortunately for Andy Dalton, everybody cares about the guy behind him.
Do you think they're holding Justin Fields back because they don't think he's ready yet, or is it just simply a case of they right now they think Andy gives them a better chance to win?
I think they are not willing to put up with the rookie hiccups that are going to come with Justin Fields. Like, you know, with you guys and Joe Burrow, obviously a totally different situation because the number one pick for what was the worst team in football. So like there's a no-brainer, new coach, all that. This, you have a coach and GM who's, you know, we don't know their contract situations. It's been this weird secret, but the expectation is these guys need to make the playoffs. And so a lot of rookie quarterbacks, you see those, I guess it'd be a 6-11 season, 7-10. You see, and that might be what they would get with Fields because he'd have these great games, he'd have these okay games, just like we've seen with Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, all those things. So I think they know that that's what Justin Fields might look like as a rookie, and they want to go 10-7. Like they want to go 11-6, and they think Andy Dalton can get them there because he's not going to make those rookie mistakes that Justin Fields might make. The problem is that this team is just not good enough around either quarterback to sustain that.
What's the offensive line look like right now? I mean, there was a lot of, we live similar lives here in Cincinnati and Chicago. of wondering what's going to happen up front and how it's going to look, and there is more injuries. I mean, is there a sense that it might be okay, or is that still just a massive question mark?
You know, sometimes you could just write down a team's outlook and try to guess if it's Bears, Bengals, Browns, Lions, Bills, right, for the last 30 years.
Yep.
The offensive line held up a lot better than I think a lot of us expected against the Rams. There was a really bad sack on a first down play when the one time the Bears wanted to go downfield. But otherwise, they held Aaron Donald pretty much in check. And, I know I watched a little bit of the Bengals-Vikings. There were too many penalty flags, so I turned it off. But that interior line for Cincinnati looked pretty good. And that's probably where the Bears are strongest, is on with their guards and their center. Jason Peters practiced Wednesday, which was a little surprising because he left the game with a quad injury, didn't return. He did fine. I mean, he's 39. Like, so you just don't know how long he can hold up for, but he's also Jason Peters. Right tackle Jermaine Defetti is okay. Like, the whole group is just below average as a unit. So like, there's obviously going to be a lot of work to protect them. But from a run blocking standpoint, they obviously did their job because Dave Montgomery had a great day. That's kind of going back to what I was talking about with the quarterbacks. Like, they don't have the offensive line to support somebody like Andy Dalton, who's not very mobile, or necessarily to protect somebody like Justin Fields, who might need a little bit longer to go through his reads.
I mean, what happens if Peters can't go, or if he goes down again? Like, Jenkins is on IR and Borum's out as well, correct? So what would he do at left tackle?
Yeah, so it'll be Elijah Wilkinson, who interestingly started camp as the first team left tackle because Tevin Jenkins was out. They didn't really know what they had yet in Larry Borum, and they didn't have Jason Peters. So the first day we were out there, Elijah Wilkinson, who was a swing tackle for the Broncos for 4 years, was the starting left tackle, and they were really, like, going into camp, they were convinced he could actually compete with Tevin Jenkins before they knew about his injury to be the starter. That obviously didn't work. And when Elijah Wilkinson went out, he was on the COVID list. They tried Larry Borum at left tackle, and he was outstanding in one day of practice, and then he got a concussion. Like, that's just the way the Bears tackle situation went. I think they had five or six different guys play left tackle throughout camp with the first team. So, yeah, it'll be Wilkinson if Peters can't go, if he goes down at some point. They seemed pleased the way he played in Los Angeles. Again, none of us really know or can have high expectations about what he can do in a game. I mean, this is a guy who went from, again, first string to third string in the span of, 3-4 weeks at camp, and now he could be back in the first string role at some point.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
The biggest thing that the Bengals offense needs to worry about is Khalil Mack. I was kind of looking, I know Paul and I were both looking at this, at how the Bears use him, whether it's left side, right side. And it seemed like early when he first got there, it was kind of 50-50. And now it's almost all coming off of that left side, which means Riley Reiff gets a heavy dose of him. Do you have any games that stand out, or do you remember how those two kind of went head to head at all? Has Mack got the best of Reiff? Has Reiff got the best of Mack?
I think there's actually a viral GIF somewhere of Mack putting Reiff on his back and getting to Matthew Stafford from a couple years ago. And I'd have to go look that up. But there was a game when Detroit was here where Mack just dominated. And I feel like Reiff was a victim of a clip that went all over Twitter. And that was one of those Mack games. And the Bears need one of those. And the problem is that you guys saw it. He had one tackle on Sunday night. That was it. Look, every team chips him, double teams him. A lot of teams will line up their tight end kind of not in line, but like really close to the line. So that way Mack's got to line up kind of as far as they can get him. So they're doing everything they can. I think from a Bears perspective, you're like, well, it's still Khalil Mack. It shouldn't matter what another team does. Like, he should still find his way to get to the quarterback. I think you know, the Rams obviously had a great offensive game plan, got the ball out quickly, got Stafford moving. This should be a better matchup for Khalil Mack, but there's a lot of skepticism in this town right now about whether or not he can be Khalil Mack. You know, we just haven't seen it consistently enough over the past 2 years.
I mean, not only Mack, you have Quinn on the. There's so much money at the highest paid defensive line in the league, but they're all older guys, and so there's like this question of how much is left in the tank on this line. To me, the scariest guy for the Bengals and the game changer in this game is Akeem Hicks, because that's where they hit the Bengals' weakness in on the interior. And I mean, Michael Pierce just owned Trey Hopkins in the opener twice for big sacks right up the middle. Where is he still kind of look like that guy? And do you feel like the Bears kind of look at this weekend as a Hicks game in that respect?
Yeah, you know, Hicks was their best player on defense, certainly among the pass rushers against LA. And Robert Quinn is very lucky that the official scorekeeper split Akeem Hicks' sack with Quinn. Quinn just happened to kind of be in the neighborhood at the same time. But, you know, I talk about Khalil Mack, you know, not putting out the production we're used to. Quinn's been, just a disaster of a free agent signing. But Hicks has been consistent. I mean, he led the team in quarterback hits last year. He just hasn't aged. We haven't seen that affect him at all. So, yeah, I think you're right. He is going to be the one who can really wreck the game. And I don't know if you guys have paid attention to this at all, but it's been a weird deal with Akeem Hicks. He hasn't talked to the media at all this entire year. And then finally on Tuesday, he had a charity event in the city and he talked to the reporters that were there for the first time. And he kind of said that his reasoning, which I don't 100% buy, was that, you know, he's in a contract. He's at the last year of his contract. He wants an extension. It hasn't come. He just didn't really want to talk about it. I don't 100% buy that. But it seems like the guy is super, super, super motivated. And we saw that in week one in LA, and I imagine he's going to be just like that this Sunday at home.
I want to go back to what you said about, you know, Andy Dalton getting booed. Maybe that's more a case of them booing Matt Nagy than they would be Andy Dalton. What is the relationship there? Because we saw that it was such a huge advantage for the Bengals this past week to finally have a full stadium again and to have that home field advantage. And maybe that's something that may not be in place if the crowd turns on the Bears early. Where is the fan base with him right now, and how hot is his seat right now?
Jay, I can't write a single thing about the Bears without the entire comment section ripping Matt Nagy or Ryan Pace. I mean, and it's been like that for 2 years now. Like, it's just, he is... I guess there was like, he's in a McDonald's commercial that just came out this week, which is just terrible timing. And I mean, it's just become like the butt of the joke in this town. It's like an incredible fall from grace from a guy who was coach of the year in 2018 and can do no wrong. The problem with Matt Nagy is, you know, so much about him is his offensive scheme, right? He brought this from Andy Reid. This is his version of it, the West Coast. That's why he's here. He's going to be creative. He's going to be aggressive. And this offense has just been bad. It's been bad. Really, you know, the first year it was good, but they had amazing field position all the time with a historic defense, and they caught everybody off guard. So now, you know, he hasn't had great quarterback play or offensive line play for sure. But, you know, you see these plays, it's just like, get that out of the playbook. Like, why is this still here? So I think 100% fans are completely fed up with just about everybody in the organization at this point, which is amazing for a team that made the playoffs 2 out of the last 3 years. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I feel like you guys probably went this at times through the Marvin Lewis era, right, where they were consistently making the playoffs but never winning playoff games, and you're always like, this is, you know, should we really be excited about this? And there was always wondering if Marvin Lewis is on the hot seat. You know, this is just, I think what you know, the difference is certainly between Matt Nagy and Marvin Lewis is there's just, you know, Matt is very confident. And he's very stubborn, and that doesn't play well when you're not winning in this town. And I don't think Marvin Lewis actually ever came across like that. You know, just different personalities. So yeah, I think you make a good point. When they're booing, it's like nothing against you, Andy Dalton. We just hate this entire plan and the people who are running this plan. Like, you're a perfectly nice guy. We get it. You have great hair, you know, all these things, but we just don't like the people who are in charge, who have made the decision to pay you $10 million and put you out there.
I mean, is he bringing positive attention to the big red beard, or does he feel like he's killing it for everyone that's trying to have one, Kevin?
You know, he's joining a beat that has several ginger beat writers, myself included. I wish I had like an eighth of the hair that he has instead of it's like almost all gone. So I think it's been certainly maybe the thing that Andy Dalton's getting the most respect for in town. You know, nobody wants, you know, because again, people don't want to talk about him as the quarterback, but like, hey, look at this guy. And you know, look, Jay Cutler, very average quarterback at times, but always, you know, last couple of years he had outstanding hair. And it's just what people kind of decided to go to when they talked about him. You know, it's funny, guys. There was a moment early in camp where Dalton had one of those practices where he completed like four deep balls. And I was like, whoa, like this guy, you know, there was so much flack about this. We had no idea what to expect. I'm like, he's pretty good. Like all of camp, those of us who are out there, we're trying to tell all the fans, we get why Dalton's starting. Like he's not losing the job. He was doing nothing in practice to lose the job. He was doing exactly what you thought the coaches wanted out of him. But the problem was then you kept seeing Fields do things every day. And then you saw Fields in the preseason. And then you see Fields in these limited snaps. They just give you this taste, this little tease. And it's just going to continue. And like if you asked me in mid-July, when's Justin Fields going to start, I probably would have said November, right? We did a roundtable a couple weeks ago. I said week four. Like I just don't know. Like if this team needs to make the playoffs. And if you're 0-2 after this week, maybe it's week three. If you're 1-2, like it's just, I just don't know how much rope they really have with this team, with this record, and how long they can go, even if Andy Dalton's doing fine. Because the problem is Andy Dalton, as you guys know, y'all covered him for a while, he doesn't take you to that next level. And Justin Fields has the ability to take you to that next level. Maybe probably not as a rookie, not with this roster, but one day. And it's just how, you know, how patient can what is usually an impatient head coach be with this whole situation.
If you have NASCAR fans, you say you need a great car. You need a perfect car for Andy Dalton, right? But you don't, could be, but you need a great driver if your car is not super. And yeah, I think that's the difference. You know, he's not driving a great car right now. You know, and his outlier season here was 2015 with AJ Green and Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu and Tyler Eifert and Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler, you know, and Andre Smith and Hugh Jackson was his play caller and he had a great car and they were undefeated and he was great. And it was, Andy Dalton. Got to have a great car for Andy or else, but it's also hard to be the 20th best quarterback in the NFL. It is like to be at that level. And I think that's why he's going to have a career that's going to sustain probably for another 6-7 years somewhere.
Oh yeah. I mean, like the Bears are very adept at having quarterbacks like Andy Dalton, who that perfect description, Paul, and just a guy you just want in your building because everybody likes the guy. Like the Bears are really good at that. Granted, they had Jay Cutler for a long time who didn't necessarily fit that description in some ways. But yeah, Dalton is, he's Nick Foles. He's in a way Mitch Trubisky. He's Josh McCown. He's Jim Miller, he's Shane Matthews. Like you go through like the long list, like he's a really friendly Jim McMahon. I mean, you could just go down the line of like decades of Bears quarterbacks and be like, yeah, Andy Dalton totally fits. Like that's, you know, who, like what this team has had at this position for so long, which is why everybody just wants to see Fields, who is going to be the one that's different.
Yeah, Chicago and Cincinnati, very, very different towns, but the situations sound so very familiar. Kevin, really appreciate you jumping on with us this morning and do look forward to seeing you Sunday in the press box.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Always great talking to the other ginger beard in Chicago, Kevin Fishbane. I love that that's a thing. Like there's just like a host of ginger beard people who are like writing loving things about Andy because – you know, the evil Andy Dalton, who's still nicer than 99% of the rest of us. Yeah. It will be interesting to see Andy and see how many snaps Justin Fields takes and all that stuff that is going to be a big part of Sunday. We also have a run passer boot Sunday, Jay. You want to try to get into a run passer boot action?
Yeah, I do.
All right. What do you got?
It, going back to Evan McPherson, the AFC Special Teams Player of the Week, which will be higher on Sunday. Evan McPherson made kicks, field goals and extra points. Ja'Marr Chase catches, or Khalil Mack pressures.
This is a good one. Jay, you've outdone yourself on this one. So last week, that was 5-5-1.
Yes.
Chase with five catches, McPherson five kicks. Khalil Mack just had one pressure against LA. There's a lot of people, you know, as Kevin was saying, wondering, what was that? Where's Khalil Mack? He'll be going up against Riley Reiff, who actually has had some success against Khalil Mack. A lot of it, I think a lot of people organizationally. Let me just say this line that kept going through my head as I was researching this story and kind of doing some stuff on the offensive line. Imagine how you'd feel this week if Bobby Hart was your right tackle. There's a reason that you love having Riley Reiff here, and this would be one, because otherwise you'd be watching Hart versus Mack with Joe Burrow's knee on the line all day. That's no fun. I honestly wonder how much they'll move Mack around and maybe even throw him on some stuff into the middle, you know, some twists inside to try to get him working on those guards and center a little bit. But anyway, it's a good question. I'm going to say McPherson kicks. I'm going to run with McPherson kicks. And I'm going to pass on Chase catches. And I'm going to, against my own, I don't know why, but I'm going to boot Mack pressures. I don't feel good about any of this. I do think there's going to be a bunch of kicks. I think they'll score. I mean, I think that they'll score. I think that, you know, he's going to be active. And I think after last week now, I think what you're going to see, my prediction for this game is going to be, I think you're going to see a Tyler Boyd game. I think you're going to see a lot of tension on the outside because of what Higgins and Chase were able to do. And Chicago has problems at slot corner. And, you know, we saw a lot of their – a lot of the Rams work come out of the slot last week. I think Tyler Boyd might be the one to go off more so than Chase, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm going the opposite of you. I think it's going to – I'm going to run with Mack pressures. I think they're going to find a way to get him back there. Being at home, the Bengals are going to have to use the silent cadence that they never had to use once last year. You know, Joe Burrow probably had to use it at SEC venues in college, but – it's going to be something new. They put him under center a lot more last week. There's just a lot more different to this. And I just feel like Khalil Mack's not a guy that's going to have two clunkers in a row. Even if it's not against Riley Reiff, if they, like you said, use some stunts, bring him up the middle, or if he does beat Reiff, I mean, he has four career sacks against Minnesota since he came to Chicago. So I think that's the higher number. I'm going to pass on Chase catches. I think he's in that 3, 4, 5 range again. And I'll boot McPherson kicks. I think this is just going to be one of those, like you said, in the preseason where every preseason game feels like 19-12. I think it's going to be that kind of game, like a grinded out low scoring, game. And, you know, if the Bengals are fortunate enough to punch a couple in the end zone, that's two field goals or two extra points and maybe one field goal. So I'll run with the Mack pressures, boot Chase catches, run with Mack pressures, pass on Chase catches, and boot the McPherson field goal or McPherson kicks.
Okay. Have fun playing at home. Fun bar bet for you guys. Speaking of bar bets, Bengals Growler Bet is back. Shout out to all the winners that came and collected at our event at 50 West.
Yeah.
That was cool for everybody that came down and was able to walk out with beers in their hand. And they put in the work. You know, and came out, and that could be you. You could come down to our next live event at 50 West and walk out with beer in your hand that you didn't pay for without getting arrested. And that's great. So we're going to go this week. Remember, hashtag Bengals Growler Bet on Twitter. It's the only way we'll see it all there together. Hashtag Bengals Growler Bet, or email me, pdaner@theathletic.com. Your answer has to have growler in the subject header. That's how I find it. Growler in the subject header. P pdanner@theathletic.com or hashtag Bengals Growler Bet on Twitter. It's where we'll find your submissions. Must submit by 1 o'clock. If you win, the delicious 50 West has all kinds of good stuff going on right now. Home Sweet Home is like the best fall beer, I think, in the city. I love Home Sweet Home. It will be in cans, by the way, soon, which you should keep an eye out for in your local store. They'll have Christmas cookie as you start getting later. They just got so much good stuff going on right now. Their Chillicothe store is up and kicking. They had like a sand volleyball tournament like out in Main Street in front of them. Like they just shut down the street and had a sand volleyball tournament right in front of 50 West out there, which is awesome. Jay, you would have loved that. I'm surprised you weren't there trying to sub in.
I didn't know about it. I should have paid attention.
So always great to try to get some 50 West involved. So this week, what is the differential in passing yards between Andy Dalton and Joe Burrow? So I need to know who's going to have more and by how much. So your answer could be, for example, Jay, what do you got?
I'm going Burrow by 50.
Burrow by 50, right on that nice even number for you.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Burrow too. I think they're going to have a big day. I'm going to say Burrow by 78. Burrow by plus 78. So you submit if you think, you maybe think it's Dalton plus 140. Maybe that's your answer. Whatever it is, it's the differential in passing yards between Andy Dalton and Joe Burrow. Hashtag Bengals Growler Bet on Twitter or email me, pdanner@theathletic.com with Growler in the subject header and your answer in the email. Okay, prediction time. Let's talk about what we think is going to happen Sunday and why. Jay, you want to kick it off?
I'm gonna go Bears 19, Bengals 17. I just, until they win on the road consistently, I don't know that I can pick them on the road, even though it's against a team that may not have, we keep talking about how they're going to be facing this hostile crowd for the first time. May not be the case. If the Bengals get off to an early start, as Kevin said, the Boo Birds might be out, but I think Chicago is desperate and they are at home. And I think they figure out a way to pull this one out. I don't think they're going to steamroll the Bengals, but I do think they pull it out 19-17.
This is like the ultimate reverse motivation week where team that gets their butt kicked on the road on national television in week one comes back and plays pissed off, at home in week two. Team that wins at home a game that, let's be honest, they got kind of gifted at the end, feeling themselves a little too much that they show up drunk on Monday and don't practice on Wednesday. and maybe aren't quite as into it week two as they should have been. You wonder if that's going to be the case. Yet, I just liked so much of what we saw out of the offense, and I didn't like so much of what I saw watching the Bears, them getting beat on a lot of explosives. The Rams' ability to turn up the running game late on them and the Bears' situation on their offensive line. You know, you look for potentially a big day from Trey Hendrickson coming off the edge on whatever's going to be happening at tackle. I mean, I remember watching Jason Peters try to block Carl Lawson last year, and it was just pressure every single down. So if that's their answer, you know, you got to feel like that could be a long day. So I got Bengals 27, Bears 20. I think they go in and do it. I think it feels different. I think they got Joe Burrow, and that's going to be a big part of it. And I look for a big day from Tyler Boyd. That's my thoughts. Certain to go wrong. So you and I on the opposite end of it. I on the opposite end. Although I should just listen to myself. I mean, everything I said before I actually picked them to win makes me think that I'm just an idiot, which is possibly very true. All right, so that's Sunday. Looking forward to, we'll of course have the walkout from Chicago. Jay and I both will be there and ship that back to you. You can listen to that after the game. We'll get that posted. And all your coverage you need. Remember, that subscription to The Athletic, the deal, 50% off for new subscribers, is running out very, very soon. If just go click on our links or go to the site or go to hear that podcast growling on The Athletic, which you can get, listen to this with no ads or any other junk, on there on our player.
So subscribe and get that deal before it goes away. Highly recommend that. Otherwise, we're out of here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you Sunday night after the game. Enjoy it, everybody.